Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Spiral Marketing Podcast, where we interview industry luminaries and experts in order to help marketers, entrepreneurs, and other organizational leaders to elevate their brands. Today's episode is about inserting your organization's message into a national dialogue. We are recording this show live on location at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. I'm sure the capital insights that have led to the growth of a global brand will help yours flourish. Enjoy.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Scott Williams is a museum and attractions executive with proven success in the museum, tourism, and entertainment industries. Scott earned his degree in journalism from the University of Memphis. He then held sales, marketing, and advertising positions at several advertising agencies, Service Master Corp., Baptist Memorial Healthcare, and most recently, Elvis Presley Enterprises Incorporated. He currently serves as president on the board of the DC chapter of the American Advertising Federation and on the board of the Historical Society of Washington, DC. He recently published a book, The Forgotten Adventures of Richard Halliburton, with History Press, and is currently at work on a book about the first pop culture reporter, O.O. McIntyre. And I did want to mention that I have been a member of the AAFDC, and I've served on a few committees, and the executive director just sings your praises, Scott.
So, well, thank you. Thank you for that. I do think AAFDC is a great organization. When I moved here from Memphis, you know, brand new to the museum, brand new to Washington, D.C., I didn't really know anyone in the industry. And so by getting involved in AAFDC, I really was able to make a lot of great friends in the business and then also get new vendors and resources. And just about every day I talk to somebody from the club that helps me with all areas of our business here at the museum.
That's fantastic. Yeah, the executive director called you a rock star.
Well, that must be left over from the Elvis days.
Oh.
Don't get all shook up.
Well, let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
Again, we're talking about how to insert your brand's message into a national dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've got a wealth of experience on that particular topic. How did your background lead you to it?
Sure. Well, my background in communications, as we said most recently, was at Elvis Presley Enterprises. It's fascinating how much Elvis is still incorporated in culture, how often you still see him every day. And so in that position, I did get to work with a variety of different outlets and online, print, radio, TV, and frequently, of course, it was about Elvis-related products and services and events and things of that nature. Here at the museum, we have a completely different business model and a different reason for being and a different mission, and so it is very fulfilling to be able to apply some of those best practices to such an important mission that we have today. For anyone who hasn't been to the museum, it's a museum of free expression, and it's a museum dedicated to the First Amendment. And a lot of the research that we do, a lot of the polls, a lot of the surveys that we do indicate to us what most people already know. There isn't a really good, clear understanding of the First Amendment and of free expression and the importance of it to our society, both in America and honestly in the whole world. So that is a big mission that we have. And we fortunately have this amazing museum in which to execute that mission. So to get back to answering your question, I think being able to have the Elvis brand to insert into organically and naturally insert into dialogue about all different topics help prepare for the work that we do here at the museum. And interestingly, I found out about the museum for the first time because they did an Elvis exhibit, and I worked with them from the Elvis side. I worked with them on the exhibit that was here. So, as I like to say, Elvis left the building and I didn't.
That's great. Yeah, a little plug for the museum. Two things. One is I don't think most people realize how cool it is. So the last time I was here, I saw an Anchorman exhibit. mm-hmm. and a Berlin Wall exhibit, which was unbelievable. Big chunk of the Berlin Wall with mm-hmm. art from the era and a tower with machine gun turrets and also the SpaceX shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You never know what you're going to, you never know who or what you're going to see at the museum. We really have become, you know, one of the iconic places here in Washington, D.C. with, you know, of course, we have views of the Capitol. We're right here on Pennsylvania Avenue. The president, right after the inaugural speech, the parade goes right down in front of the museum. So we're right here. One of the most popular artifacts you mentioned was the Berlin Wall. We have the largest piece of the Berlin Wall in the United States. We have the radio antenna tower from 9/11. We have all different, very, very important artifacts and stories that we tell here. But because we are, you know, a super high-tech, super interactive, free speech celebrating museum, we also have a lot of things that kids love to do. So we're really kid-friendly. We have a lot of, we have a place where kids can do their own news story. Highly interactive, super popular amongst families when they come to D.C. So thank you for the plug. It is a great place. But again, the reason for all those things is so that we can help remind people of why free speech is so important, of why the First Amendment is so important, and what all five freedoms of the First Amendment are even.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah. That was the second piece that I wanted to bring up, is that when I read the mission online, I recognized the five freedoms of the First Amendment.
That's right.
Thank you. It's something that I think people will recognize, but I bet if you ask 100 people, 90% won't be able to say, okay, here are the five freedoms.
It's very, very, very low. Like 3% of people can name all five freedoms. So your listeners right now should try in their heads to say the five freedoms of the First Amendment in their heads, and we won't say them right now.
I bet they're thinking speech.
Petition.
Right.
Petition is the one that everyone always leaves out.
I see.
Poor petition never gets enough airtime. So we definitely focus on that a lot. So for example, we have a civil rights exhibit that really shows how people used all five freedoms of the First Amendment, how especially students.
Do you want to say them real fast? We got speech. Mm-hmm. We've got petitions. Mm-hmm. Is press?
Yes. Religion.
Religion.
Uh-huh. And I've lost track. Assembly.
Assembly.
Yeah. So okay. Those are the five. What's also important is not just the five freedoms of the First Amendment, but also how they're applied and when can they be applied. You know, freedom of religion, of course, right now is a big topic. I am by no means a First Amendment expert, but I get to work with a lot of people who know and who work in that realm so expertly. And so it's so fun to get to help them. For me to be able to use my marketing, PR, and organizational skills to help them further their voices is the reward for me personally, because it is, again, such an important time right now to be making sure people are aware and they remember. And for example, take freedom of the press as an example. People take for granted what they read in the newspaper, that they have the right to read things in the newspaper. So we have a journalist memorial here, and every year we rededicate it and include the names of journalists who sacrificed their lives the previous year in order to report. And we have the families of many of those slain photographers and camera people and journalists. They come to the memorial for the rededication. And for a lot of them, it's the first time that they really were able to sit with other families of other journalists who also gave their lives. And so it's a very, very moving experience. That same day, the last 2 years, we've had a program called Without News. And so some of your listeners may be aware that we have, along the front of the museum, we have front pages from newspapers. Every day here at the museum, we get about 1,500 PDFs of front pages of newspapers uploaded to us automatically. So they go into a file.
1,500,
yeah.
Wow.
And so then we have a crew that comes in early in the morning, you know, makes selections and then prints out 50 for the front and then another 30 or so for the exhibit inside the building. And so on the day that we rededicate the Journalist Memorial, we just simply put a huge black square and a hashtag without news in there and really draw attention to the fact of what would you do if there was no news, if journalists weren't able to. We then also make a print ad and an online ad available for newspapers, for all those 1,500 newspapers to participate in this by either running the ad or running a banner on their websites. And so we really, you know, encourage a bigger community to then commemorate the fact that these journalists are working so hard in such risky situations, you know, and to create awareness around that.
Excellent. I'd love to get one of those ads for the show notes page.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we'll get you one. Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
And you can actually, your listeners can go to newseum.org/withoutnews and see a lot of the photos and information about that.
Excellent. And we'll get every link that we mention up on the show notes page as well.
So great.
They'll have a nice reference point for everything we talk about.
Great.
And I think that talking about the museum is a really important point here, relevant to today's topic, because the museum is not just a local celebrity brand. It's a global brand, mm-hmm. and it represents many other global brands and issues related to the news. Mm-hmm. So the topic of inserting your brand's message into a national dialogue, I think, is highly relevant. And I'd like to warm the audience up a little bit to that topic with how mm-hmm. you think about that subject.
Sure. I mean, I believe it's got to be as authentic as possible. And so we don't try to force it. We truly look for opportunities. And brand is one word we could use, but another word could be just be our message and our mission. And when something takes place in the bigger world, how do we at the museum engage with that so that we can get our mission inserted in as part of the dialogue? So there are many examples of ways we try to think through. We are like everybody else and every other organization in that we're stretched way too thin and we have too many people working too hard, doing too much. But, you know, it's just that is the way we all do things nowadays. And so, you know, we have to have a little bit of flexibility. We like to plan way in advance. We're not like a lot of museums in that, you know, some museums need 4 or 5 years to plan out an exhibit. Wow. You know, we take a little bit less time to plan. We do everything in-house, which helps us have that flexibility. But we are always looking for things that take place that are in our wheelhouse enough that we can't not get involved. So as one example that just happened yesterday, when the Democrats in the House staged the sit-in,
right.
You know, that touches our mission on a variety of things. And even though we were all in the middle of doing a lot of other things, we needed to stop what we were doing. And we immediately found some of the feeds that were coming out of the House, you know, because they turned the cameras off. And so, you know, that freedom of the press, of course, is very important to us. So we began showing any of the live feeds we could find on our giant atrium screen that is in the atrium. So both our visitors and people walking along Pennsylvania Avenue were able to see what was going on in the House. So we were championing those who were getting the word out and sharing it. We also frequently, and this is something that's a museum thing, but you know, there may be other ways people could apply it. We have added, I guess last year we added talk back walls is what we call them. And they're just giant white pieces of foam board, essentially, and with a question at the top and a yes, no answer and some stickers. And then people can vote, you know, yes or no on, you know, we change it out frequently on a variety of topics. So should relating to topics like gay marriage, gun control, you know, all kinds of issues, we ask yes or no. And, you know, sometimes they're related to the press. They're always related to free speech type issues. And so it helps people think through how they feel about a certain topic and also see what the rest of the visitors to the museum have felt. And interestingly, you know, everyone's always clamoring for high-tech solutions to problems. This very simple solution that our exhibits team came up with it has become high tech, or digital at least, because everyone photographs it and then uploads it to Twitter, and I see it on Facebook all the time and on Instagram. So it's become a very popular activity here at the museum. We also have some places like in our new FBI gallery, which explores a lot of issues related to freedom and what are you willing to give up for, you know, free speech and security. And so we have a talk back wall where people can actually just take a marker and write on it. And it's just a dry erase board. And, you know, the question is, what are you willing to give up to feel safe? And so, you know, it's interesting to see people's comment and things of that nature. So those are things that we've done in a very quick, very small scale. Things that are a little bigger, that take a little more planning and forethought. When the riots were taking place in Ferguson, it turned out that we have someone who works here who had family in St. Louis, and so she went home and she gathered some protest signs and a reporter's notebook, and she found some things both for our archives but also that we put on display. So we literally had an exhibit that went up like while it was still happening. Wow. So it was like a real time, right in the moment. And then we had a lot, some local journalists came to the museum to do stories about the riots in front of the exhibit that we had just put up. So that's another way that we, yeah. Now, I mean, but in all those cases, it was very authentic, made a whole lot of sense for us, and was furthering our mission of reminding people of the First Amendment and getting them thinking about it.
Right. Yeah, I see that pattern and I'm loving it, that there's a lot of creativity in getting people to think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no,
think
absolutely.
About their rights, think about their lives and what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, the museum, about half of our visitors, our general admission visitors, are 18 and younger. So we have a lot of kids who are coming in here who obviously weren't around, you know, during the early civil rights era. Who
right.
I was at the 9/11 exhibit recently, and I heard a kid say to one of, you know, his parents or his teacher, "I thought this was part of World War II." You know,
wow.
So, you know, so we're really reminding people of, or educating, we're informing in a lot of cases, you know, very much early on, you know, in their educational life. So they're in the 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And so we're really proud of the fact that we can help insert First Amendment free expression type thinking into them at that age. We also have a huge education department and they do a fantastic job. They actually have teaching tools at museumed.org. So if there are any teachers listening and on your notes page,
absolutely.
Museumed.org offers a ton of free resources that teachers can use to teach First Amendment and free expression topics.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot to be inspired by in your work, certainly. What do you find most inspiring?
I would have to say what I find most inspiring, I'm a marketing PR advertising guy.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm not a reporter
or
a journalist.
In good company.
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but what I find most inspiring are all of these journalists that I get to work with. You know, these are, you know, I work with some of the founding editors from USA Today and people who've worked for some of the best newspapers in the world. And so, you know, they're bringing their skill set and their backgrounds into this team. And so it's so much fun to watch them and to learn about the skill sets that make a good journalist and to observe them and the energy and the excitement. You know, when something breaks, when, you know, when news happens, you can just feel them wanting to jump into the story. And there you can see their wheels turning and you can see how they approach, you know, how they approach executing a project may be a little different than the way I would execute it. So I would say that adding that element to the MIT has been one of the most rewarding. The other would also be different ways that we as an organization are exploring the impact of digital communication to free expression in the First Amendment. So, you know, no longer are people waiting for their newspaper to read to find out what's going on in the world. You know, they're finding it out from blogs, from Facebook, from, you know, from a variety of different sources. And so that certainly impacts in a big way free expression and the freedom of the press and, you know, how people interpret what they're reading. Digital literacy, as we call it, is also really a lot of fun and really fulfilling, because I, like everybody else in marketing and PR, I mean, we all love, you know, the internet and digital communication, and we're all trying to crack the code just like everybody else. So this is just a different aspect of that. And so we're really doing a lot of work in that area, and I get to watch these really smart people try to figure those things out as well.
Excellent. Thank you. What are some of your favorite stories of success or failure?
Stories of success or failure? One thing that we did that I think was a great example of success that we did last year was when the leader of China came here to Washington, D.C. And, you know, we had a discussion about it. China does not have a fantastic record when it comes to free speech and to people being able to express themselves. So, you know, it's something that we felt like was an opportunity to bring attention to. And so we had a man came and he hand lettered out these signs that we had enlarged and put on our huge front of our museum. And as it turned out, he himself had been imprisoned for things that he had written or said. And so he absolutely was the perfect person to do that. And then we had in our front page cases all along the front, pictures and stories of people that are currently in prison in China for infractions like writing poems that they didn't agree with, or a short story that they might have thought wasn't appropriate. So it was a chance for us to bring attention to that, and it did. And so those are the kind of things that for me are the most rewarding, when we're able to think about those people who are really in prison, who know that someone out there is working for them and trying to help bring attention to the fact that they're in prison.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like an interesting juxtaposition there.
I'll tell you another one really quickly.
Sure,
that,
please.
That was really fulfilling and fun was, we got a phone call from the marketing team at Arby's.
Okay.
And Arby's said, we bid on and won Pharrell Williams' hat, because he had worn a hat to the Grammys, and the social media guy at Arby's had tweeted at Pharrell, "Hey Pharrell, we want our hat back." And so Pharrell Williams responded, and it just became a huge media sensation. It was all over entertainment media. It was huge. And so they called and said, "We bought the hat. He put it up for auction for charity, and we bought it. We would love to put it on display at the museum." Well, we were super busy. We were way behind. And so, you know, unfortunately, we just had to say, you know, we just can't right now. But I hooked him up with some people that I knew who I thought might be also interested. Well, a week or so went by, and they sent us this really cool video. And they said, "We think the museum needs to have this hat on display. And here's a little video we put together to convince
from
you."
From Arby's?
From Arby's, yeah.
Okay.
And so how could you say no to that, right?
Right.
So we put the Arby's hat on display for a few months. And really, the purpose of it being on display was to bring attention to social media communication and how it's, of course, everyone knows its huge impact. It was a very interesting aspect of it, just to see the numbers of how much that raised their impressions on all the networks and all the fun that went around it. And so we had that on display. But as part of that, it's almost like the ripples just keep going. But as part of that, there's a Deaf Camp that had done a really great video to Pharrell Williams' song Happy. And so it was a huge sensation. It was on Entertainment Tonight. It was, you know, millions and millions of people watched it on YouTube. And so they contacted us and said, you know, the Deaf Camp contacted us and said, "We would love for some of our performers who did the song to come and perform it live at the museum."
Wow.
And so we did that too. We had the media here, and they were amazing kids and so talented. And so the museum was full of happy noise and talented kids, and it was just really a fun experience for everybody involved.
Oh, that's amazing. One of the things that I really like about that is I think it illustrates what you're saying about being genuine and also there's a lot of intersecting value there in a way that is authentic, right? As Arby's has their own interest, of course, or to push their brand message and awareness, which is business, but they're also helping your mission, which is to get the people thinking about their rights in the First Amendment.
Right.
And also Pharrell has his hat show.
Absolutely, yeah. Everybody wins.
Right.
We should put the happy video on the notes page.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, so if anybody wants to get happy, they can go watch it, yeah.
That's wonderful. I think that's also a good segue to how else this message can help listeners. So why don't we start with, for background, what somebody should do to get started in this field. What do you think person's first day on the job would look like?
I mean, I think one of the most important things to doing anything like this is culture, making sure that the culture of the organization is such that they would be open to something like this. This is not the kind of thing where people have to think rigid in boxes, and you know, organizations have to truly be willing to be creative and to have that as an objective, to want to be responsive. And of course, I mean, you have to also figure out a way to be responsive without ending up being like whack-a-mole. It's not a panicked thing. It has to be somewhat well thought out. But it's culture. And so I think it's, if you're in an organization where that kind of culture doesn't exist, it's, you know, working with senior leadership. If you're not senior in leadership, it's working with senior leadership to shift the organization. And that's going to have to come from the top, because trying to do that kind of thing from the middle up and out and down is going to result in failure, in my humble opinion. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is, that's super important, is you've got to have a team that trusts each other. So you got to have people who are willing to make themselves vulnerable when it comes to what they do or what aspect of what they do. So that's really important. I mean, the other thing is, I think knowing what your mission is really well and knowing what your objectives are as an organization that are the most important, so that when those things do happen, you can know that this is authentic. You can tell when something's authentic. The other thing would be to have some ideas already ready of ways that you can execute. So like, we know we have 10 or so things that we know we can do quickly, efficiently, that would help us insert ourselves into what's going on. And so we have those sort of easy to execute. And then we formed the rapid response team, is what it's called. So when something happens, someone from the rapid response team will send an email to the others on the rapid response team and say, this just happened. How should we? And there are times when we say we shouldn't. There are times when we decide, you know what, we just can't right now. We don't have the bandwidth. And so, you know, we don't always do this, but we always discuss it. And we always say, should we, how should we, you know, and we have some things we can do that are fairly easy, you know, from Facebook polls to, you know, there are simple things we can also do, you know, that don't require, you know, a big outlay of time or expense. So I think that's the thing that I would most probably also do, is have that list ready.
That sounds great. Well, that's a busy first day, but wow, that would be productive.
Yeah, let's say first month.
Maybe first
90 days.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds appropriate.
Yeah, first 90 days.
Any other tips and tricks you might suggest?
I think the other thing is, that's really important, and it's oftentimes, even with me, especially with me, it's oftentimes easy to forget to report and measure, and when it's over, you move on to the next thing. But I do think it's really good to analyze what happened, what you did it work, how did it work, and analyze it honestly, not like you're trying to justify your existence in the world. You know, it needs to be true numbers, and if you only got 100 impressions, there's no crime against trying and not getting a huge response, which also goes back to the culture of an organization. You got to be able to fail. I love the fact that here at the museum, we can fail. You know, we try and fail every day at something. So if you're trying to cover up failure and you're trying not to fail, then you are going to fail. So the culture's got to be open.
Thank you. That's excellent. Very helpful. I know that we're running out of time here. You're a busy guy. do you have a question or mantra to keep yourself inspired or sharp in this work?
You know what? I just work really, really hard, and I just treat everybody that I work with the way I would want to be treated. So
that's great.
Isn't that the golden rule?
The golden rule.
I think that's, you know, sometimes the golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules. I follow that one too. But for the most part, I treat other people the way I'd like to be treated.
Perfect. Any thoughts on the future? What do you think the future holds for this whole realm?
You know, I was at South by Southwest this past year, and anybody who was there, I was actually walking past a guy who was on the phone with somebody, and he said to his person on the other end, he said, well, I've heard a lot about virtual reality. And he was right. It was everywhere. So virtual reality, of course, is what everybody's exploring and talking about. It's been around for a long time. Right now, everyone's really trying to figure out as the hardware becomes more available, what kind of content is going to be out there? And so I'm around a lot of content generators, and we here at the museum are putting together an exhibit that launches next month on virtual reality and its impact on storytelling. And so that, of course, there are a lot of free expression initiatives that are going to come out of that going forward. But visitors to the museum after next month we'll be able to experience virtual reality. Every month we're going to start putting the top 10 virtual reality experiences. We're going to demo those here so people can come and visit and try all the different virtual reality stories that are happening, both in the news and with people who do documentaries and things like that. So I think that's going to be an area that we're going to continue to see growth.
We'll have to come back for that.
Absolutely. It's going to be really cool. And we're going to have an AAFDC program about it. So
okay.
In conjunction with the launch. So you'll have to
Perfect.
Come to that.
Absolutely.
And you can demo it yourself.
Okay. I look forward to it. And I think that's a great answer. True to form, making people think, as virtual reality is inevitably going to change the way that we consume media and news.
Absolutely. I've demoed it myself, and it is remarkable, and it does remarkable things to your brain. And so there's a lot of issues there, like responsibility and how people use it. There's a lot to be learned and discovered and discussed, and it does add a whole new layer on digital communication that we didn't know about before. So it's all exciting and new, and that's what's so exciting about this business is we all get to be right here on the forefront of something. Of course, 100 years from now, people will look back and laugh at us thinking this is all new and exciting and different.
Right.
But it's so much fun to be on the forefront and to be learning about all this together as marketers.
That's fantastic. Well, I know you need to go. I will definitely link to your book. I'm sorry that we didn't get a chance to talk about that much.
We'll do that for the next podcast.
Perfect. That sounds great. Well, the very last question mm-hmm. is, what is the best place for listeners to learn more and to reach you?
You know, they can reach me at museum.org in the bios of the leadership. I'm there. Of course, I have a LinkedIn page. You can link me in.
Okay.
Scott Williams in Washington, D.C. And then any questions, they can email swilliams@museum.org.
Very generous.
And I love talking to my fellow marketers.
Perfect. Well, Scott, thank you so much for being on the show.
You bet. It was a blast.
I'm sitting here in the Journalist Memorial exhibit of the museum, thinking about all of Scott's stories and insights. Sometimes I like to conclude episodes with a summary to crystallize the learnings for myself and hopefully the audience. As I sit here surrounded by pictures of fallen journalists, I'm struck by the rapid speed of change in our world. One thing that stands out is that this episode is about how you want your brand and message to guide and influence the world. Looking to the past and seeing what has been sacrificed to give us the freedoms we have gives helpful context to how our vision can shape the world. Of course, no host or speaker can tell you how to leverage your brand's vision, but I hope this episode will be a helpful thought exercise to be creative in authentically leveraging your brand's message to help influence a larger dialogue. Thank you for listening and participating in this great experiment.